they're speakers, authors, and real-life rock stars, bringing you life-changing thoughts that rock, taking conversation all the way to 11.
Most shows only go to 10.
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? These go to 11. To 11.
This is Thoughts That Rock. Now, here are your hosts, Jim Knight and Brant Menswar.
Well, welcome everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on Thoughts That Rock. This is the podcast about exchanging two pieces of life-changing advice squeezed into about a half an hour.
Listen, we know exactly how frantic life can be and how hard it is to grab those little bits of wisdom that might be able to amp up your life. So we want to do whatever we can. So listen, whether you are flexing in front of your mirror, or you're trying to cover your bald spot, or maybe you're shaving your arms, we just want to be the 30 minutes that you look forward to each and every week.
And just a quick reminder, gang, whatever format you're using to listen to the show, if you like the podcast, we would love it if you would take a moment to give us a rating and share your comments and just really push it out there for everyone to see.
Whatever we can do to put you in the mood to do that, you just let us know and we're going to do everything in our power to make that happen.
Because
You know what it means when you hear this music.
Yeah, I know what time it is.
You know what time it is?
I do.
It's business time.
Our guest today is our good friend, fellow speaker and road warrior. Some people might call him a change evangelist or the pager-wearing millennial. It is none other than the founder and CEO of iSocial Fans, Mr. Brian Fanzo. Brian, welcome to Thoughts That Rock.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah.
Man, I got to tell you, Brian's one of my most favorite people here. I'm just following him. If you don't follow him on social media, you should. He is one of the most prolific documentarians of what he does on a daily basis that it's hard to not get wrapped up in his life. And he is a busy, busy man. Such an interesting background. You know, 9 years with the Department of Defense and Cybersecurity. He's out now as a full-time speaker on the road from conference to conference, sort of really broke onto the scene maybe a year or two ago with his Press the Damn Button talk that just really started to tell people how should you be telling your story, right? And it resonated so well that it's led to him just sort of taking over the scene in the digital marketing space. He is everywhere. His new talk on digital empathy is really creating a bunch of waves as to how do we cultivate this digital empathy? How do we connect innovation with emotion? And the work that you're doing there, he's a prolific podcaster. I mean, he's who we want to be when we grow up, from his FOMO Fans with 100 episodes or so to Just Try This with the amazing Amy Landino, for Smack sure. Talk. Gosh, I mean, the guy, I don't know what, do you sleep? Do you ever sleep, Brian?
I'm very blessed that my mom was worried about that my senior year of high school, that I didn't sleep very much. And I got diagnosed ADHD at 31, and I kind of realized that was part of it. And so I don't have to sleep too much, but part of it's I love content creation. I love the storytelling. And for me, it's about reaching the audience where the audience prefers to consume content. So I create a lot of video, create a lot of podcasts, and of course, love being on stage. So I'm blessed to find something that I love to do now. And it is a lot of work. I there's people that tell me when you do something you love, it doesn't feel like work. It still feels like work, but it's just work that I enjoy. So I'm okay with that.
You know, it's obviously working for your brother. I mean, Apple just named your Just Try This one of the podcasts to watch. If you guys haven't subscribed to any of his podcasts, you should be doing that right now, whether it's FOMO Fans, Just Try This, Smack Talk. I think you said you've got another one you're getting ready to start here soon. Is that right?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, it's true. I got one more. I got one in the works. It's I did an interview show on Google Hangouts for almost 3 years and did 300 plus interviews, but it's been 3 years since I've done interviews. All those podcasts are me or my co-host and I just kind of bantering around. So I'm finally, I have an assistant, I have a community manager, and I'm going to be launching, the name will be announced soon, but yeah, I'll be launching an interview show very soon. So excited to take it even more. Why not? Just keep riding this ride.
I tell you, man, you're making us feel very, very lazy.
Extremely.
We got one show and it's like, oh man, we have to record more episodes. That's fine. But we do things a little differently here, Brian, you know, versus the traditional interview style. style that you hear on many podcasts. We like to get right to the point of sharing the great pieces of advice of our guests. So straight up front here, what is your thought that rocks?
Thoughts that rock, number one.
All right, so my thought that rocks, it kind of goes along the lines of that press the damn button, but it's really just raise your hand faster than anyone else. Dive right in. And for me, that means a lot in my career. When it first happened or when I first embarked on it, I'm not sure if I realized the implementation of it, but I think in a world full of information overload and so many decisions and the idea that we do try to be perfect, even though we all know that perfection is a fairy tale. My thought that rocks is definitely, you know, raise your hand faster than anyone else and don't be afraid to dive in.
Yeah, you know, I think that's such an interesting thought. This idea, I think that we have a culture that's obsessed with perfection, right? And so it can sometimes stop us from engaging if we don't think we have the perfect answer. It goes back, you know, many years ago in my first band, we were playing a festival over in England we played for many, many years over there. Loved it. Loved going over there to play. And one of the sort of the grandfathers of Greenbelt, which is the festival name there, was this guy named Pip Wilson. And Pip worked for the YMCA for many, many, many years. And we were sitting around the fireplace one night after the festival was over, and he started to talk to us about the idea that as a culture, we could be staring at this masterpiece painting on the wall, and if it was hanging just a little bit askew, everybody would be obsessed with going over and trying to fix the paintings without even looking at it. They wouldn't even notice that this could be, you know, a Picasso. This could be just a masterwork. And we are so obsessed that it's hanging crooked that we miss the beauty and the imperfection. And I think that lends itself to what you're talking about, is that sometimes people feel like, man, if I don't have the perfect answer, if I'm not going to have this exactly right, maybe I shouldn't raise my hand at all.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that also has a lot to do with schooling, right? I think we are definitely in a shift. I think for those that, you know, I am a social media guy. I'm on every single channel that exists. And I like to say that social media in 2019 and 2020 is way different than social media 2015, 2016, 2017, where it was a lot of filters, a lot of rainbows and unicorns and faking it till you make it. Mm-hmm. And I think we as consumers are over that. We're like, okay, we see through all of this. We understand how to kind of dig a little deeper. We also realize that if all you're sharing is the highlights and the amazing things that you do, we pretty much are pretty sure that you have a really crappy life, that you've just, you know, decided to magnify only the good things. I think that's kind of the neat part. We're moving now where consumers are demanding transparency. But I think as individuals or even as leaders or as, you know, those of us that are kind of living this space, we were always taught, you know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I hated that answer. I still hate that answer now because I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be. And I think I'm okay not ever having that. And, you know, I'm a dad of three girls. And I think for my daughters, I will sometimes question them and say, are you more afraid to raise your hand and get the answer wrong, or be the person that's the fifth to answer the question? And they will always say, you know, they're like, oh, I don't want to get it wrong. I would rather wait and not answer. And I think that's partially that schooling. And for me, weirdly enough, like, school was such a struggle for me. Through high school, I barely got into college. I loved college other than the schooling part of college. I was in a fraternity. I played college hockey. I was also, between a fraternity, I was a computer science major and played hockey. I loved schooling. I loved the ability to kind of merge and meet with all these different people. But weirdly, school always, you know, it was a little bit intimidation. It was also kind of like that idea of, like, you know, am I getting laughed at for what I don't know? Yet it's the weird part is we get into the real world and we always hear about all of the failures that people have had, right? Michael Jordan getting cut from the team, Oprah Winfrey telling, you know, being told that she could never be anything, you know, Steve Jobs getting fired from Apple, or even, you know, the different things within, you know, Elon Musk and all that stuff, you know, these leaders today. And so it's interesting that, you know, I think the culture has always said the great ones have jumped in and failed, yet in schooling we kind of don't reward failure, and then there's that middle road. And for me, I think that was such an interesting spot for me, because I, you know, getting out of college was a struggle, and then getting my first job was even more of a struggle, and and kind of figuring out, okay, well, how am I going to do this? Because I was really successful at leading teams, you know, in my fraternity. I was really successful playing hockey. I also played baseball. I played poker as well. You know, for me, I was really good at these different, you know, things that I was doing because failure never scared me. And it was really mainly for one reason. And that main reason was that I knew that failure was never something I would settle for.
Yeah.
I think, that's how kind of my parents raised me. And so raising my hand or throwing myself out there was never something that scared me, except in the classroom. Weirdly enough, the classroom is probably the place that scared me the most with that.
And, you know, it's so great, too, because I know you're talking about your school, you're talking about career, but you could apply that concept to just about anything. And I think about, you know, your background is crazy interesting. I mean, I just think it's so amazing, and the fact that you did raise your hand got you to where you are now, and there's no doubt about it. And I belong to an association that's, you know, hospitality ground. It's restaurants, hotels. It's called Chart. And one of the things I learned in my very first year is people were screaming literally at the top of their lungs, "Yes, I can do that." Like, the whole idea was, if there's an opportunity to volunteer. So you move into this volunteerism mindset. If you just raise your hand to do anything, regardless of what it is, that'll lead to you being a part of, let's say, the conference team. And eventually you could be on the board, which is a, you know, voted on group every single year. And eventually you could become president of this association, where maybe that level you'd never be able to do in, let's say, corporate America, but you can do it with the association. So I just love that whole idea, because you get a chance to just jump right in and get cracking when you raise your hand. You know, it might not be your cup of tea, but at least you get to try it out and go, yeah, that was great. Or look at the great results, or it was fulfilling, or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. You know, I think also for me too, I've learned, you know, it's that adage where, you know, and maybe it's partially, through my first marriage and things that were going on, I've always been the one that, to be okay with asking for forgiveness, not permission. And we hear that a lot, but, you know, for me in my career, I mean, I remember the day, you know, I was, I got out of college, couldn't get a job, decided to work for UPS, union UPS driver, wearing the shorts, brown shorts, delivering packages. I'm a competitive person. They were doing a Christmas hire, and they told us, there's 98 Christmas hires, and the top three performing Christmas hires will be hired on as union. So I'm a competitive person. I ended up being number two of those three, got that job, and was making really good money out of college. And when I tried to get into the computer field within UPS, they told me, you might be one of the smarter guys in this space, but we're union, we're experience driven. You need 7 years. 7 years from now, come back and apply, you know, jump on the truck. And to me, I don't play well in that area that says, like, you know, hey, you're better, but you have to follow some ridiculous structure. And, I ended up being in line at a grocery store. Someone recognized my fraternity letters, asked me about what I did. And then we talked about computers. And the funny part is, they said, you know, do you know anything about cybersecurity? And I said, no. And they're like, have you heard of the word vulnerability? I said, no. And he's like, have you heard of the term remediation? I was like, no. And he's like, so here's the good news. He's like, the good news is I don't have to unlearn you on anything. So I was like, that's a nice way of putting it. And he was like, the bad news is this would be a completely, you know, new learning curve. But he's like, I can get you a security clearance. And I live in Northern Virginia. And if you think about this, in 2004, Northern Virginia, really everyone worked for the government or worked for a government contractor. That was pretty much this entire beltway. Thankfully, it's changed a little bit since then. But, I got a help desk job, and I was working 6 a.m. to 3 a.m. Supporting a software tool for the government. I got my security clearance, and I could tell right away, like, it was something that I enjoyed doing. I spent a lot of time doing it, but it was nothing I learned in college, nothing that, you know, jumped at. And yep. And at that moment in the grocery store, I was like, hey, I'm willing to learn. And I watched a lot of videos, was doing a lot of things, but it came, you know, 6 months into this job, and it was a Friday afternoon, or I think it was actually Thursday afternoon, ended up being the day they came in. And the boss that actually saw me at the grocery store came into the help desk. There was about eight of us sitting around like a big cubicle square. And he just simply said, hey, guys, I have some news for you. One of the guys that runs our training department has decided to leave abruptly. And we're a little worried about that. So I'm curious, would anyone here be willing to go to Korea on Monday? And I was the very first one that threw my hand up. And I tell you, when he said that, the only thing I was thinking was, free trip. And when they said that, like, the person had quit immediately, I was like, well, I'm gonna throw my name in the hat, like, with not thinking like, oh, I need to go train a course in a foreign country in 3 days, and I don't have a passport and all these other things that go into that. And he asked, he's like, do you have a passport? I was like, nope, but I can get one. And so I got a same day passport. I spent 6 hours in the Washington, D.C., you know, office to get a same day passport. I jumped on a flight. There was a 15-hour flight from, I went from D.C. to Atlanta, Atlanta to Seoul, Korea. I had to jump on a high-speed train 2 hours south and had never left the country before at that time. I had been to the Caribbean on cruises and things, but never really left the country. And the whole way there, I can tell you, I was learning the tool for what I was going to be training the military that we were there. And I remember thinking, and the weird part was, like, I never thought, why the hell did I do this? I never thought, what the hell did I get myself into? I kept thinking, how am I going to do this better than anyone else that's done it, to where I could be doing this kind of work instead of being the help desk guy? Like, I remember the couple of the other guys on the team that were much more senior. I was the lowest on the totem pole. They were like, Brian, like, what were you thinking? Like, do you realize, like, that course hasn't been successful? And I was like, well, I wasn't really thinking. And my like experience in life is that if I say I'm going to do something and I commit to it, I do it. Like, I won't say I'm perfect. I won't say I always win, or I'm, you know, and I kind of knew that deep down. And, you know, I remember every night I would go in the class. I was teaching active duty military members how to use this cybersecurity tool. And I would get out of class. I would run and get some really good local food, run it back to my little hotel room that I had. And I would study the curriculum to teach these guys the next day.
Yeah.
And it was intense, 4.5 days. But on that last day, I remember it's like not only a feeling of accomplishment, but I had a couple guys come up and give me a hug. I had one of the senior members there for working for the Department of Information Security had come into the class on the last day. And I asked him, I was like, you know, what happened? He's like, everyone here has never met anyone like you in the training department. I was like, well, I'm not a trainer. And they're like, what are you? And I was like, well, I'm a guy that likes to translate complex tech stuff into easy executable stuff. And he just like looks at me and he's like, I'm not sure that's a job. And I was like, well, I'm not sure it's a job either, but it's why the people liked me here, you know. And to kind of wrap a bow on what that happened for me was I on the flight home, I landed in Atlanta. I had one of those international Blackberries, and I remember turning my Blackberry on, and sure enough, an email had been sent to my boss from the head of the team that we were working on, and said, Brian was the best trainer we've ever had. We've never had anybody that was that passionate, was that into it. And if you want to add more classes or add more courses to the upcoming contract, as long as Brian's executing on them, we're in. And it was, I remember reading that. I remember my boss saying, like, hey, I'll talk to you when you get in the office. And sure enough, you know, I got promoted 4 levels above the help desk, you know, and not only that, but I, all of a sudden I kind of made a name for that piece of it. And, you know, in the next year after that, I grew a team. We ended up tripling the contract the following year, and I ended up making that team into a 34-person training team, executing 4 courses a week, every single week around the world. And I like to say, none of that happens. None of that experience, none of that happens if I didn't raise my hand first.
Yeah, and to the extent that I am now looking at your background, taking several trips, you know, doing stuff with the military over in Iraq, Afghanistan, literally reporting updates up to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. You know, I find that amazing. And I'm sitting here looking at Brandt right now and thinking, this guy's like 70 years old. He claims to be, you know, the millennial keynote speaker. You know, look at your long sad life that you've led. It's honestly, it's amazing. And it's, you can't see this right now, Brian, but it's so ironic because Brandt's actually wearing a UPS uniform right now for no reason. He has nothing to do with UPS. He loves the brown. I don't know what it is.
Brown looks good on me, right? And so, you know,
I like it.
I think it's amazing, but you know, it's funny. So the stuff I think that scares people mostly when they do say yes, they do raise their hand and they go, yep, I'm in. And then they have to go, well, I need to figure out what I just said yes to. You know, I have a friend, Alan Schaefer, who's going to actually be a future guest here on the podcast. But Alan and his twin brother started an organization back when the internet was, he was told, was going to be a fad. Him and his brother started this company that had this great idea to say they were in a band and they said, we just want to put our tour dates online. That's all we want to do. And at the time it didn't exist. And so they end up developing the software. It becomes tourdates.com. And he ends up going out and selling this to this company who acquires them. And his brother he says, look, I just sold this. I told them that we're going to be able to put all the tour dates online and this is how it's going to work. And his brother's like, well, we don't actually do that. And he goes, we do now. And it's this idea that sell it first, figure it out later. And I think that you've proved that, you know what, if you have sort of the fortitude and the willingness to dig in, you know, it's where the term winging it comes from, right? I mean, all these actors who were sort of thrown into the wings, having to learn lines of roles that they were just about to step on stage and play. That's exactly what you did. You sort of took that time while you were over there. Every last second you possibly could, you were learning the curriculum to turn around and teach it to others.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I think that's an interesting space too, because, you know, for me, you know, I you know, as much as college was, you know, for me, college was great for, like I said, everything but the classroom. You know, I like to say I went to YouTube University, right? You know, so much of what I learned, I decided, you know, hey, I can go to YouTube and learn it. And today there's online courses for everything under the sun.
Yeah.
And I often struggled even with the online course model, because I would ask people like, well, why are you paying that money? And they're like, well, they put all this here. And I was like, well, you realize you can go learn all of that for websites or on YouTube or on, you know, listening to podcasts. And most of the time they would say, yeah, but I got to go do all of that. And I guess that's for me is part of this, like, you know, I think faking it till you make it is done.
It's
now, how do you prepare to learn on the fly? And I'll say this hired for since that day, and the other cool part about that weird story of me, you know, those employees that I was hiring, the first 30 of those that worked on my team were all older than I was. So like I was the young, you know, I was that millennial, I was that kid. It taught me so much about not only cross-generational communication, but, you know, how to build a team. I strongly believe that if you're self-aware and know what you don't know, it allows you to then decide, you know, to surround yourself with people who know what you don't, right? I think that's a weird spot for so many people. They're like, well, how did you like, and I was like, man, I didn't know this thing on cybersecurity, but I had someone in my network that knew that, right? Or I didn't know this person that did this. And so I think to me, that was such an element of not, it wasn't really faking it. It was more like, hey, I'm willing to put in the hard work. I'm willing to put in the hours. And that's even a lot of what I do today. Like I live on the bleeding edge of emerging technology, but I don't claim to know everything. I don't claim to fake, you know, what I do know, but I am willing to put in the time. You know, as much content as I create, I listen to 12 podcasts a week for my own personal consumption. And I even block off time in my calendar for that. And I think that skill that I've always said that I hired for in those first employees is the ability to roll with the punches. If you can roll with the punches, be able to throw your punch up in the sky first and then roll with the punches as change happens, I think success is, you know, is imminent and, you know, in the palm of your hand. You just have to be willing to do that.
Well, and I think you also are living your own motto. You're living the thought. You know, when you start thinking about putting yourself on notice by titles like change evangelist or technology evangelist, you don't have to have all the answers, but you're willing to, I guess, lean into that. And that's part of raising your hand faster than everyone else and figuring it out. And awesomeness occurs when you do that.
You do. And I think that's kind of the fun part of today's the world we're in today. Like, I truly do believe, and I say this on stage every time too, I truly believe we're living in the greatest time in history. I think we have the ability to share our story, connect with the world without limitations. And the limitations that I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and, you know, even some of my family that are still there, they've never left the city or the state. Their exposure to the world is extremely, you know, tight knit. And for me, like, my 9-year-old daughter has Skyped with one of my friends that lives in Australia, and she knows what Vegemite is. Right? If you think of that. So I know they make it a big thing until you try it. And you're like, thank you.
Exactly.
But I think that's part of the fun that we're, you know, the space that we're living in. I think those that have been getting away with, getting away with faking it, getting away with not being willing to put in the hard work, renting the Lamborghinis and putting them on Instagram. I think those days are numbered. I think those people that are doing that, their time is coming. And it's more of those people that are willing to admit what they don't know, are willing to put in the hard work to figure out, how to make things work. And then ultimately are willing to kind of share that knowledge. I part of what you said, that intro is, you know, I create a lot of content. I share a lot of things, but part of it is just because I really do think, you know, the more we share our stories and the stuff we know, the better the world is. And I feel like it's, you know, those that aren't sharing their stories, aren't putting themselves out there, they're doing a disservice to themselves and to others. And that's just kind of been my mantra through, you know, from cybersecurity to a data center company to about the last 5 years running my own business. It's the roller coaster has been, you know, not being afraid to throw my hand up there, not being afraid to kind of put myself out there, but also, you know, admitting when I fail and admitting when I don't know. Those that follow me on Instagram, they know that for sure. I have zero problem on saying, wow, I tried this and it completely failed, or yeah, I was thinking about doing this, or I put this out there and it didn't work. And I think that also, you know, adds validity to the things that I do share, which, you know, is probably one of the lessons I've learned along the way.
Yeah. And I think it's a perfect transition, because ultimately sort of you're talking of this shift in culture of people being willing to be a little bit more vulnerable and not just putting forth their best life as we sort of see on social media these days. But, you know, it leads us to the second thought that we really want to share.
Thoughts that rock, number two.
And this thought is this, and it's, if the goal is survival, then you've already lost. And, you know, when I think through what you've just shared of how as a culture we're making this shift to being a little bit more real, I don't know how much more real I can get in this example for you. Is that, you know, those who know me know that my oldest son Theo, when he was 12, was diagnosed with a rare blood cancer. It was a horrible scenario where we spent 263 days in the hospital with him battling. He pulled through, but it's been a fight, right? I mean, he's 21 years old now and he's still fighting. And it's this scenario though where people think, you know, you want to be a cancer survivor, but I really, people who have been through it, that is such a limited view. And if they knew what survivorship looked like, they would know how bad it sucks. And it's like, you know, nobody thinks about what life looks like after you survive. And if the only goal is to survive, it is a sad, sad existence. We've got to move beyond survival into thriving. We need it to be more than what it is. It's not just about, you know, withstanding the storm. If all you're going to do is stand among the wreckage when it's done, what's the point? I mean, you've got to get to this point where you're like, you know, life is meant to be more than just surviving. And unless you're willing to be vulnerable, unless you're willing to have some of that empathy for others and people are willing to share and say, hey, look, I am thrilled that I'm in remission. I am thrilled that I've survived cancer, but look at me, my life sucks. Mm-hmm. It's not until people get a dose of that reality that we can start to find that empathy in those people who say, you know, it does suck, but you know what? I'm going to stand with you through this until you're on the other side. And we're going to do whatever we can to make sure that you can thrive in your life and not just be a survivor. Is that,
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's powerful. And I, you know, and being a dad of three, you know, that, you know, not only, I can't imagine that from that side. And even the sense of, you know, encouraging others while also surviving. Cause I know that, you know, it's those around are going through that, you know, as much. And I think in the world today, you know, I talk a lot about change as a, you know, as self-prescribed change evangelist. And I think the rate of change today is unlike we've seen it ever before, right? Yeah. It's everything changes so fast. But I also think the change today is the path to allowing ourselves to change is a much easier road. We don't have to be as set into stone into things they do. And I love that you brought that up as far as the goal not being survival, because for me, most people ask, how did I get, you know, what happened in the cybersecurity space, or how did that all, you get into, you know, marketing and millennial stuff now? And I can tell you, I got promoted, 9 years in, and, you know, when I got promoted and, during the, you know, ceremony before I actually got the actual promotion, my boss at the time was like, Brian, you're set for life. He said, you know, you are set. You are going to work for the government. You're the youngest we've ever seen get this role. You have the highest civilian clearance you could get. And it rocked me to my core. Like, it really rocked me. And part of the reason was, for the last 2 years, I had it made. I was playing poker part-time. Mm-hmm. I had these great employees that traveled around the world for me. I got to handpick which cities I traveled to shadow their classes. And I think that's when I kind of first, I didn't realize it then, but now looking back, I've also realized that, like, as soon as I believe I get complacent, as soon as I get comfortable, I know that I'm about to get rocked, and I know this is where I'm not at my best. And I ended up, you know, pretty much leaving within the next month. We lost one of the bigger contracts, and they asked me what I wanted to do, and I said, I want to get out of the government. I want to completely change, and I wanted to give up my security clearance against everyone's recommendations. But that's part of, to your point, was I knew that I could survive and make really, really good money. And I was already, I was already making more money than I have on my own way back then. And I was, had the clearance. I had the government job. I mean, cybersecurity, it's right now that the career is taking off. I left there 7 years ago. But for me, that's part of it, what it was. And the other underlying piece of it was, I remember telling myself, like, if I want to impact the world, if I want to make a difference, I need to give myself opportunities to have different experiences as well as reach different people. I didn't want to be siloed. And I think that also happens in that survival mode where we start living for the day. And I think as we kind of get to that end point or that point where we've been working towards, the question becomes, okay, well, what do I know? And how big of, how big is my impact? I call myself, I'm team no niche, because I like to talk about a lot of things, and I don't really have one of those, a niche. But part of that for me is, like, I know that job security for me is a no-brainer. I can learn and pick up whatever I want versus someone that is so honed into one thing and just trying to make it, last as long as they can on that one thing. And so I think that that's a great lesson across the board. And it's been one for me, that I love and I embrace. And I think it's allows in this world full of change to kind of roll with those punches as it kind of linked it before.
Yeah, I hope that the sort of shift in people getting real and showing, what life actually looks like gives people the strength to know they're not alone, right? I mean, ultimately, if you have a job that you are working for the sole purpose of surviving, what existence is that? I mean, that to me is like, so are you living for Friday night so that you can have 2 days worth of happiness in your life before you go back to some soul sucking job that, that you're surviving? I just, I know that for a long time when we hear the word survivor, obviously it's because someone has been through something and they've gotten to the other side. And that is what it is, right? It's commendable. And it's what we want to sort of look at and honor in all those instances, but it can't stop at being a survivor. I mean, if you want to grow, if you want to have impact, I mean, that you just brought up one of my core values, right? And so I can't have the impact I want if I'm only going to be a survivor. I've got to be somebody who wants to push it forward. I've got to be somebody who wants to walk away knowing that the legacy that I leave or the impact that I've had is transformational. And being a survivor doesn't mean that you're transformational. It just means that you survived something horrible. And we want people to say, you know what? You were meant for more.
Yeah.
You were meant for more than being a survivor. You were meant for more than living a survivor life. You've got to get to the other side of that and know that you can move forward. You don't move on, but you can move forward. And in that moving forward, you are going to find that impact and that meaning and that purpose that we so desperately desire, that it allows us to say, I'm thriving now. I'm thriving. I went through hell. I got to the other side, but I didn't get to the other side and take a seat and go, wow, look at that. I got to this side and went, thank God I passed that. But man, I got to keep moving forward because I want to get as far away from this shit as I possibly can, because it is not fun. And I hope that sort of empathetic nature, that we're starting to see, the vulnerability that's starting to come through, even on social media, when people are willing to get real, that it has such a positive effect for others to say you're not alone, and you are meant for more than just being a survivor.
Yeah, because that's how people fall into that victim mentality, right?
Yeah.
And maybe just connecting both your thought and sort of what Brian was talking about, you become apathetic, and that's where it starts to set in, right? And I know if you're trying to avoid this sort of victim mentality and just sort of sit back on your laurels, or like Brian, like you were saying, somebody says you've made it and you sort of sit back and go, look how great I am. You're only awesome until you're not, right? And somebody's going to come along and do the same thing you're doing, maybe at a cheaper price across the street or whatever it is. I can point to a date on the calendar when businesses start to go out of business because they've sort of sat back and said, yeah, we've made it to the promised land, and they're nowhere near that. And it was just, it was reminding me in a former life, I was a licensed facilitator for Stephen Covey, his, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I remember that first habit of be proactive, which is a little bit different than probably what, a lot of people think, but it was about life is how you choose it to be. You know, it's not dictated to you. And so the whole concept of stimulus and response, right? Like with Brant, I can only imagine, sort of the life and what Theo has gone through, but you had this stimulus that occurred. And a lot of people say, well, when that happens, there are automatic responses. You're going to behave and act differently. And that wasn't the case in your world. You chose not to allow it to happen. And in this sort of computer metaphor, you decide, I'm the programmer. I decide. I choose. My life is not dictated to me. So, I use the simple example of being cut off in traffic, right? If we actually, had a predetermined response, everybody would cuss or shoot the finger or road rage or whatever it leads to versus, no, you can totally slow down or put on some soothing music or, wear a UPS outfit, whatever it is. So I just think, when you think like that, you're empowered to live like that. And so I think that idea that you're talking about, Brant, that just surviving isn't enough. The goal can't just be survival, and on the flip side where Brian, you're talking about, raise your hand and lean into it and jump into the change and be a change evangelist. And, between those two, you can't help but think that there's a lot of positivity that's going to occur.
Without question. I think that also, also leads itself into the, you had mentioned like the digital empathy side. And for me, I think this is where we sometimes, not only survival mode, but we tend, in this world full of change and this world full of, I like to say fake news and bad news, unfortunately, at the moment. We try to figure out, how do we cut through the noise? How do we live in this world, or how do we put things out there? And I mentioned earlier, like the Michael Jordan or the Oprah or the Steve Jobs stories. And in those stories, we found out about their failures after their greatest success, right? We didn't live those failures as they were happening. And I think the world we're living in today is about sharing that as you're going through the journey. To your point, it's not just about the surviving and having these dates, but it's allowing other people in.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe, and this is kind of my mission, I believe it's my life's work, is this idea that says, I believe to be empathetic for others, we must first allow people to be empathetic for us, which means putting ourselves out there, being vulnerable, sharing the stories like we just heard, and kind of allowing people to realize that you're not alone. I think that, the idea that we could be better humans if we remove technology and innovation is impossible. Those things are not going to be removed from our lives. It's now about, hey, how do we prioritize these things so that we use technology or social media when it makes the most sense, and that allows us to reach people, but that we can spend more time connecting with people at a deeper level. And I one of my things is, I believe suicide rates should be going down, not up right now. And I think part of the reason is because we're still getting into this culture of transparency and realizing that we're all humans. And I really take offense to when someone says, they blame social media for all of the bad that's being exposed at the moment. And I always tell people, I think this kind of falls in that mantra. It's, we have two choices. We can blame social media and technology for the things that are wrong, or we can recognize that there's bad people in the world. There's evil. There's things that we've been doing really bad for a long time. There's also been suffering and things that have been happening in silos, in small rooms, without people realizing that, there's more than just themselves suffering. And we can change ourselves as people and then use these technology and social media to change the world, or we can just continue to blame the things that we don't understand. And I like to believe that we're moving towards the piece of, truly understanding how we as humans need to involve, we as humans need to share. And I can tell you, as much as I the stories and my experience, when I mentioned one time on stage when I was 32 years old that I had ADHD, that the impact of that presentation is still probably one of my most powerful ones I've ever given, as I ended up reaching about 8 or 9 people in that one audience that were ashamed at their diagnosis of ADHD and thought people were making fun of them. And I never realized, and I wore it as kind of a badge of who I was. And I think the more we hear these stories, the more we feel people are alone, and the more we move from judging people to realizing that people that we can understand people without having to agree with them, and then we can help people get beyond survival, right? And I think this is that exciting spot where those that are going through these horrible things or these tough times, by sharing that story, you not only allow others to realize, you know, you're not alone, but you allow us in to kind of help with that process. And I think that's why, you know, I love the times that we're living in. And I do believe in this idea that, you know, the more we embrace digital empathy and realize that it is a healthy balance, the more we're going to make the world a better place.
Well, I think it plays right into the quintessential superhero: with great power comes great responsibility, right? And
amen.
We've been given this great power with social media, and what we choose to do with it is totally up to us. And if we can use that for good, to help people to express some empathy towards others, to know that they're not alone, so that they can get beyond being a survivor. And once they get on that other side, we can encourage them enough to raise their hand first, so that they're out looking for new ways that they live their lives and grow and experience life. I think it's a win-win all the way around. So listen, brother, we want to say thank you so much. We know how busy you are, obviously, of squeezing us in for a few minutes. What's the best way for people to get in touch with you, to follow you, to make sure that they get the maximum dose of Brian that they can?
Sure. So I appreciate you guys having me on. I love the topic. I love the focus of the podcast. You know, this is part of it, right? I love great people doing great things and sharing their stories. And you two, you know, to use the pun, you guys are rock stars, and I appreciate you know, having me on. I preach, you know, consistency and being, you know, in the digital world, it's kind of hard sometimes to be found or discovered. So the company, my brand is iSocial Fans, the letter I. I'm an Apple fanboy. So it's iPhone, iPad, iSocial Fans. And it's fans with a Z at the end, or a Z. My last name's Fanzo, so I kind of played on that. So iSocialFans.com. I can pretty much guarantee every social network that's out there, I have an account I'm probably pretty active on. It's iSocialFans. And then I launched a new speaker website a couple months ago over at brianfanzo.com. So it's that's full speaking. If you go to isocialfans.com, you'll find my podcast, my blog, all the media I create. But those are the two places I like to tell people. I'm on every channel. I'm pretty active on every channel. You know, don't have to follow me on all the channels. Whichever channel is your favorite one, I would love a follow there. And if you listen to my podcast, my only advice is don't listen to it at 1.5 speed. I sound like Mickey Mouse because I talk so fast. But that's how it works. But I appreciate you guys having me on.
Brant, do you think Fanzo understands the concept of just delivering one awesome thought that rocks? I mean, he's given us like 3, 4, 5.
I know.
He's doing too much. Well, he's too awesome.
If we are lucky enough to reach 100 episodes, my brother, you will be on again, and we will continue the journey. Listen, nothing but the best for you. We love you. We think that you're amazing. And just anything that we can do to continue your journey of making the impact in the world that you are, you count us as fans of Fanzo. So thanks so much, brother. We really appreciate your time.
Appreciate it, guys. Cheers.
You got it. Rock on.
Hey, rock stars. Thanks so much for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, please subscribe to make sure you don't ever miss an episode.
And if you're interested in having Brant or me or both of us speak at your event, we're exclusively represented by Kepler Speakers, the industry's leading resource for booking conference keynotes. To start your unforgettable experience, go to KeplerSpeakers.com.
Until next time, rock on.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.